One of the things that I think is good about being a solo or having experience in a small firm is, while it can be challenging, but learning all of the operational steps, what it takes to go out and identify clients, provide the services to them, invoice them for the services, collect the dollars, deposit that in your account, pay your own bills, pay yourself from that. You're a small business owner. And being a small business owner and understanding that, to me, makes you a better advisor, a better legal advisor to the type of clients that I work with. I mean, I have a couple that are large and are publicly traded, mostly working with their law firms and things like that.
Welcome to the Founding Partner Podcast. Join your host, Jonathan Hawkins, as we explore the fascinating stories of successful law firm founders. We'll uncover their beginnings, triumph over challenges, and practice growth. Whether you aspire to launch your own firm, have an entrepreneurial spirit, or are just curious about the legal business, you're in the right place. Let's dive in.
Welcome to Founding Partner Podcast. I'm Jonathan Hawkins, your host. I'm with the law firm GC. I'm very excited today about our guest, longtime friend of mine, solo attorney. Used to be based out of Atlanta, but now is in Seattle. Rob Turner, why don't you introduce yourself, Rob? Tell us about your firm and what kind of work you do.
Thank you, Jonathan. It's great to talk with you. It's awesome to see your success and what you're building with the Founding Partners Podcast and helping attorneys around the country and the world learn from other folks about how to grow their practice. So the best way I describe myself professionally now is an outside GC, outside general counsel, working with a lot of closely held businesses and close ownership groups, helping their businesses with a variety of business, commercial, and commercial real estate matters. And in the past, with some ebb and flow with the economy, I've also had a communications component to my practice as well. But that's what I do in a nutshell, is serve closely held businesses as their outside GC.
Awesome. We'll get into some of this, but you're a true solo, correct? Do you have any staff or anybody with you?
I have one colleague who has been with me for a while, and we use her services as a paralegal, but she does not sign anything or anything like that. She assists in initial drafting, and then I take it from there, which is just a unique tangent because she's primarily a mom, but a former practicing attorney who can help do some good quality base level work. But as far as what I'm doing and the responsibilities, yes, I would say true solo.
Cool. So let's start at the beginning. Take us through, why did you become a lawyer? What sort of led you to the law?
The pregnant pause. When I was in college, I was a history major and I enjoyed studying history. And I had two concentrations, the United States Civil War. And then I wrote my senior thesis on a component of the United States space program. But I really did not know what I wanted to do when I finished. And while in law school, I had some summer internships with several businesses. And during those internships had interacted with their attorneys. Up until that point, I basically thought all lawyers were Matlocks. You wore seersucker suits and went into court. I had no idea that there was this thing called a business attorney who did not go into court and who helped on more contractual matters. I just didn't know what that was. And that piqued my interest during some of those internships, my sophomore and junior year, and really took me down the path of discovering, hey, lawyers don't all have to be courtroom litigators. You can be a business attorney. You can be trust and estates attorney, employment law, whatever. And that helped set me on the course.
And so you're from the Southeast, but you went to law school in Seattle, but then you came back to the Southeast for your first job. Did I get that right?
Yeah. So you've got it exactly right. And my wife now, we were dating in college and she went to a different school and also in the Southeast. And we had decided relationship-wise, we wanted to be together, but where was that together? And in the mid-90s, she was an engineer with a strong technology major. It happened that Seattle, Washington was just white hot for jobs in the early technology.com boom. So between that and law school, we decided to make our way out to the West Coast. So out here, finished law school, and we stayed here for about another 7 or 8 months post-law school for me, so into early the following calendar year, and we decided to relocate back to the Southeast from there.
And you basically went, I'll call it big law. Is that sort of correct in your mind?
I worked my way into big law. And I'm going to say this with a smile, but I was not top 10% of my law school class. So I did not have those opportunities based purely on an academic resume. So our interim stop between Seattle and working our way back to Atlanta was Nashville. We were in Nashville just under 2 years, and I worked at a boutique business law firm that had a strong commercial real estate practice. And it ended up being that we found ourselves, my wife and I, spending many weekends in Atlanta just to see friends and family. And that kind of helped drag us down to Atlanta professionally from a home base. And I worked at a couple of local Atlanta firms that also had business and commercial real estate practice before stepping up, if you will, into Southeastern regional big law firms.
So a lot of opinions about big law, good and bad. Was that something you aspired to? Is that something you wanted to do? Or you just sort of found yourself there? And then we can talk about what you thought of it if you want. But
I think that in law school, my law school experience, which was a good one, but it was what I would call a traditional one, where it seems like it catered to the litigators and those in the top five, top 10% that were going to go to big law firms and, you know, work there for 30 or 40 years, become partner, and that's going to be the end all be all. So at some level, whether consciously or unconsciously, it was ingrained into me that that was what we as attorneys were aspiring to. I had also seen from working in the smaller firms, I liked their nimbleness. That was something using current terms, responsiveness, efficiency. But big law to me was something to aspire to. And that's what I was building towards in my mind as stepping stones with those earlier jobs. I called them stepping stone jobs. I knew I probably wasn't going to be there at most 2 or 3 years. And then ideally I was going to use that to leverage up into something broader.
And then eventually you left big law. What did you do after that?
This is another good question. And what I think your listeners will find, particularly those that are, no hair or gray hair like me, is that we've all seen several economic cycles now of a boom and bust. We had recessions coming out of the dot-com bust. Then we had the 2008 Great Recession. And, we had some more recently coming out of COVID. But what and where I felt like the big law was important was it provided a platform and it gave you the opportunity to get exposed to a lot of experts in other areas of practice, litigation, environmental law, just to name a few, employment law, whatever. But my frustrations at the time in leaving big law, just my own personal ones, was that the firm I was with at the time, I had been there nearly 6 years. It felt like, I was following the career trajectory that you're supposed to keep graduating up. I was hitting all the marks with billable hours. My one time a year annual report or annual assessment was always good. And so we were checking all the boxes. But because of the 2008-09 recession, they just were not going to promote senior associates into partnership levels, even junior partner levels. Part of my law school experience, dialing it back or interest, and even back to when I was in college and the internships I mentioned, was that I thought it would be really neat at some point to work in-house with a larger business's legal department. To me, the blend of practicing law with the business and whatever its objectives, that's really where I wanted to be, and not, as I say with a smile on my face, just preaching law from, you know, the 50th floor downtown to clients. I didn't want to be that way. So during this Great Recession, there was a local internet service provider and communications infrastructure business that approached me with a need in their in-house position. So my frustrations with the firm that I was at the time, and it wasn't significant, but just frustrations at not being promoted up and gosh darn it, you know, where am I going to go from here? Coupled with interest and something to go to. And I had always had in the back of my mind another, like, hey, I want to be an in-house attorney. This seemed like the thing to do. And the in-house position was in Atlanta. But I've written down right here in my notes prepping for this because I want your listeners to hear it from someone else more as a cautionary tale. And I'm pointing to myself. It's important to know what you're running from just as much as it is to know what you're running to.
And great point.
I let my desire, the cloud, and impatience to get away from big law. I think at the end of the day, if I had to do it over again, I wouldn't do it. But, you know,
I
wouldn't have taken the in-house position. But I didn't do my homework as thoroughly as I should have because I was so intrigued at the shiny object of what I was running to and just knew that I wanted to get away from those guys because I felt just burned or what have you. So that was my step. That was the path of getting off this one rail and going down the more entrepreneurial rail that I've been on since then.
So let's recap. There's a few things in there that I think important to people out there. You know, number one, the path to quote big law, there are many paths to get there. Yeah. So just because you didn't get it straight out of law school, if you really want it, there's a way to get there.
Absolutely.
Potentially. The other piece is once you're in it, you can do everything right. And forces outside of your control somewhat dictate whether you make partner or not. And it's frustrating. You know, there are practice areas that if you're in real estate and there are no deals going on, it may be that you're just not going to make partner because of that, or vice versa. Because it's hot, you may make partner. So, you know, there's some luck to it as well. Yeah. And the other piece is, you give all this time and work towards it and it just may not happen. And then the other piece, you know, it's you've meandered at this point that we've talked about into a lot of different positions. So you've done a lot and you've been able to do a lot of different things with your law degree and you're able to go in-house. But so after that, so you were in-house for a while and then you decided to leave that to go back to private practice, right? Tell us about
That's that. Right. Yeah. So when the in-house opportunity presented itself, I had also started just background looking at other smaller firm options in Atlanta. And what I was particularly interested in my mind was I was trying to find a law firm that replicated the very first law firm that I worked at in Seattle, Washington. And what's neat, just for you guys to hear, and even as mentors and parents, as people are always watching. And I didn't realize at the time how influential that firm would be on me professionally throughout my life, my professional life. It is still the benchmark to which I compare every single place that I've worked at to and what I aspire to. So I was looking for that firm or something close to it in Atlanta, and I found it and, you know, had a couple of conversations with the partner over there, and it made sense. He gave me an opportunity to join his team and leave what I was in that just was not a fulfilling role. And part of it was I also knew I did not want to go back to big law, you know, that we keep talking about that term big law. I just didn't want to go back. At that point, I had been practicing about 10-ish years, a little bit more than that. and, you know, had seen enough from the inside that just didn't feel like that's where I wanted to be or where I would feel professionally fulfilled. I wanted to roll my sleeves up and get out and find folks that were at or near contemporary age-wise. And I'm, you know, saying that with a smile on my face, plus or minus 10 or 15 years, but folks that really wanted a relationship, a true trusted provider or trusted advisor that I could work with and, you know, deliver the kind of services that I felt that their businesses needed. So that's where I went to straight out of the in-house position.
And so, okay. So you leave in-house and you join a firm. Is it just you and this other partner?
Yeah. Just very closely held, just us two. Yeah.
Okay. And so what was it like? So you went from big firm as an associate to in-house to now, so you have a partner. Was there a learning curve there? What was that like for you?
There was, and that's really, I think, important to know. The learning curve was seeing so much of the operational side that I just did not have visibility into with big law. What does it mean when a check comes in? How do we record the dollars that have come into the firm's account? How do we divide that up amongst ourselves and what percentages, you know, what did our agreements say? But all of that, what and how did that take place? What does our website say? How do we market our services? How do I get reimbursed for what I'm investing with all of these business development meetings? I don't have any dollars in the door. Is it in advance? You know, all of those kind of things, eye-opening that I just didn't know. But again, in this case, it was a good what I was running to. I knew I had to get the hell out of the in-house position and wanted to get away from there. So,
well, the other thing too is you came from places that you really probably had no decision-making power to a place that hopefully you had at least some, but it was shared. Yeah. And then how did you guys, you know, work through that sort of thing? How, you know, was it consensus? Was there, you know, how'd you do it?
A lot of it was consensus. And the analogy I use for this one is it's almost like at the end of the day, it's renting. For me, I describe it as renting a room from someone whose home was already furnished. And we were very closely aligned in much of the decoration. And I could hang my pictures on the walls and things like that, continuing this analogy. But at the end of the day, if I wanted to do some painting or renovation or knock down a wall over here and really, you know, think about expanding or things like that, just the way our structure was, because I was coming in as a junior partner, ultimately it was my colleague's, it was his decision one way or the other. He had the check, you know, I get to control what ultimately goes on the say. So it was after we had 4 or 5 years of that, again, good, really good working rapport. That's when I started to get the itch to, you know, say, this has been good. I've learned a lot. I've learned how to do it entirely on my own. And this, you know, I think will be a good springboard for me to go, you know, flip the switch and do it myself.
So at some point you decided to separate and do your own thing. So before we get into your own thing, how was the separation? You know, we all know partners are breaking apart all the time. And some are more amicable than others. And even the amicable ones are still strained sometimes. And, you know, you can talk as much or as little as you'd like, but how was that process sort of separating?
Ultimately, it was clean and professional, and I'm still in touch in a good way with my former colleague. So that should tell you what you need to know. But it was dollars that drove the separation too, and just the ebb and flow of the time that we worked together. We had one agreement, and then that was modified. You know, I'm doing the up and down to, you know, increase or reduce the percentages that Mr. Turner received. Yeah. And I don't want to say it was crammed down, but that's the way it was. So looking at the dollars and cents, holy cow, this one change made colleague X amount. That would have been, you know, a lot of meaningful dollars to my family. And That wasn't the only reason, but it helped spur. But again, it was an amicable separation. And, you know, the best vote of confidence I can say is I haven't done so recently, but, you know, we were referring business back and forth to each other and, you know, still talk and all of that. So I think it was handled about as cleanly as could be.
Well, that's good. That's a somewhat happy ending, I would say. It's, you know, people ask me a lot, what's the number one cause of law firm breakups? And yeah, certainly money is one of them, but control obviously is another. Yeah. Some of the others are, you know, lack of a shared vision about whether to grow, whether to stay the same or whatever to do. But glad you guys were able to remain friendly and refer each other business. So, all right. So you go out, you start your firm, which is what you have now. So let's start. What's the name of your firm? Let's start with that.
InTown Legal.
Okay. So I like that. So you chose a trade name. What was your thought process behind a trade name versus something else? And how did you come up with the name?
Couple of thoughts. Actually, the firm that I was with, the one that I had just left, you know, following this chronologically, we also had a trade name. And the experience that I had practicing in Seattle in the late 90s, that was when trade names were just becoming in vogue. And I really liked it. I liked it because it did not have a person or persons' names associated with the firm. And you know, my just own personal take, right or wrong, has just been I did not want to have a legacy name with folks that, you know, no longer practice or no longer associated with it. I didn't want to use that to build the brand. So when I was thinking about what I'm going to do, I just knew that I was going to use a trade name. The why on the name that I chose itself, InTown Legal, to me, I hoped it would resonate with clients and prospective clients. You know, it's not, you know, ABC from Savannah, Georgia or wherever, or, you know, from Denver, Colorado. It's just, here's the firm. And in my mind, it could give the flexibility to practice at different locations under that same name. And excuse me, whether it's opening up different offices, you know, multiple law firms have multiple offices around the country. You know, you can go and, you know, do a drop down menu and see they've got all the major cities dotted. Don't know whether I'll ever aspire to that, but I wanted to have the flexibility so that if we were InTown Legal Nashville, InTown Legal DC, InTown Legal New York City, Denver, Seattle, San Francisco, whatever, we could do that. And that was, you know, the reasoning behind it. And then, you know, good counsel was that was a domain that was available too, and I could get it across all the social media platforms as well.
That is a good point. When you're picking your name, check. It's hard. I mean, all these domains are taken nowadays, so it's hard to get it. But I mean, obviously, I have a trade name that I use. Really like it. It's interesting. My sense was that it really was a West Coast thing that has made its way east, and it's really becoming more and more common. But yeah, I'm a big believer. I think that was a cool move and a good move.
I like it. So
yeah. So you went out on your own, you know, and you were in Atlanta. What, same kind of law? I mean, what were you doing? Did you have staff with you? How did you handle it when you went out on your own?
Well, I'll dial it back. One of the things that I think is good about being a solo or having experience in a small firm is, while it can be challenging, but learning all of the operational steps, what it takes to, you know, go out and identify clients, provide the services to them, invoice them for the services, collect the dollars, deposit that in your account, you know, pay your own bills, pay yourself from that. You're a small business owner. And being a small business owner and understanding that, to me, makes you a better advisor, a better legal advisor to the type of clients that I work with. I mean, I have a couple that are large and are publicly traded, mostly working with their law firms and things like that. But those are the outliers. The rest of them are more closely held. So it's like, you know, I can talk to them and say, hey, I own a business just like you. And again, the example I used earlier, I'm not just preaching from on high. This is practical legal advice blended with business perspective that, hey, you really ought to consider this, that, and the other as part of your decision-making process. So that was, to me, important with why and how to help build InTown Legal and my platform. But to give you a long, I've given you a long lawyerly answer. It's me. It's me doing it all. And I have used contract attorneys depending on the ebb and flow of where we are with, you know, client management and things like that, or brought in other attorneys who are of counsel to our firm, or have just referred client matters directly to larger firms that might have the horsepower or the skill set to address, you know, a nuanced matter.
So to circle back and highlight a little bit what you were talking about there, you know, you go out on your own and it's a huge learning curve because you're not just practicing law. You're,
right,
you know, buying supplies. You got to get a desk. You got, you know, all the little things you got to do. You got to open bank accounts and just the little things that take a lot of time and you got to figure it out. And I mean, it's not necessarily hard. It just takes a lot. Right. And you learn along the way. But again, some of the advantages of being a solo, I mean, you get to decide who your clients are. You get to decide how much you're going to work that day. You get to decide what the website looks like. You don't have to confer with anybody else. You get to decide. And, you know, you can keep your overhead pretty low. That's another advantage of, and be nimble. You know, a lot of lawyers that are at big firms or wherever, sure, you'll probably work more and do more stuff, but you get to keep more of it typically. Now, there are limitations to it. I get that too. But, you know, there are some advantages to sort of going out on your own. So let's move forward a little bit. You know, you practiced here in Atlanta for quite a while. I think we met before you started your firm. But eventually, you decided, I guess you and your family decided you wanted to move back to Seattle. And so that's a big decision. I mean, you'd been in Atlanta. You'd practiced in Atlanta for many years. All your contacts were here. All your referral sources. You knew all these people here. You probably hadn't been living in Seattle for a long time, maybe visiting, I don't know. Yeah. And you just decide, hey, I'm going to get up and move across the country over there. Take me through that decision-making process. And, you know, how did you, in your mind, balance the risk reward for that?
See my smile.
Real quick. Thanks for listening. If you're getting any value out of this podcast, please take 2 seconds to hit the subscribe button and leave a 5-star review. It would really mean a lot to me. Now back to the show. And we'll talk about, tell me when you did it. Give me the date you did it. And then that'll lead into some more stuff we'll talk about.
Yeah, I'll peel it back. So from our family side, we used the occasion of our oldest child graduating from high school. And, you know, let that child finish up in Atlanta. And we decided to move that summer, the summer of 2019. And the crystal ball that we were looking at was broke, and it did not have global pandemic in the next 6 months as something that we were looking at as returns. But I'll tell you the why. So I have to wind it back. And the flexibility of running your own practice or having your own shop is what enabled us to do this, because we had just in the previous 10 years, even when I was at Big Law, we started at, you know, a week and a half or so doing old school family road trips. Like we would go out to the Grand Canyon. We drove from Seattle. You know, we drove all the way up to Niagara Falls and through Canada, another road trip. But we would do these things and they were wonderful, but we had not brought our family out to the Pacific Northwest where my wife and I had lived, you know, back in the 90s. So we wanted them to visit. And at that point I had InTown Legal up and running and, you know, felt like it was stable enough. So we, you know, rented, you know, Airbnb type home out here for like 3 weeks. We're like, let's stretch it and see what that was like. And stretch it in the sense of, hey, you know, we can get up early and keep East Coast or close to East Coast hours, do whatever work we need to do in the mornings, and then still have most of the afternoon Pacific Coast time free. So what that ended up being for us was a good trial run to say, hey, I don't have to be, you know, physically tethered to one location where much of my client base is located in order to provide services to them and keep the income going. You know, I can be somewhere else. It was something that came to be known as remote work, right? We were doing it before it was cool. Saying that with a smile. But that was one summer. Then we repeated it two more summers coming out here as well to the Pacific Northwest. And at that point, it was just, you know, we had been in the same place in Atlanta for 20 years, loved it, but felt like, you know, change is good. Even with challenges that come with this, change and growth can be good for you personally and the family. Wanted our children to live someplace else in the country. So that was, you know, at a high level, how we helped make the decision. And because we had success in this remote work several summers in a row, you know, we felt like we could make the jump without too much attrition in our businesses. My wife is also self-employed. So that's what we did.
So you move out there, summer 2019. With the you know, keep your client base here in Atlanta and your relationships, you'll probably get more clients from Atlanta. And then the plan was to go and network and get to all the lawyers in Washington and take them to coffee and all that kind of stuff.
Sure. Wash, rinse, and repeat. Yeah.
Then COVID hits. Oh my gosh. What did that do? I mean, I know it hit everybody, but what did it do to you and your plans?
It effectively paused them, and in hindsight, it's paused them about 2.5 years. So I'm about 2.5 years at this date in March of 2024, as we're recording this, where I thought I would be if we had not had that. So that's what it's done in the short level. I mean, I'll talk about the COVID too. And just for your listeners, Jonathan and your law firm GC counsel to InTown Legal. And during the worst of the time with COVID, I can remember some very just strained, not like other than emotionally strained conversations with you. Like, I don't know how we're going to get through this. Like, a lot of people, we certainly, that wasn't unique to us, but as a solo for your listeners, that's one thing, you know, you are much more exposed to those kinds of risks. And the decision-making that we made to move out here, yeah, it was a calculated risk, but I don't have gazillions of dollars in the bank to as a backstop. I mean, it was a risk predicated upon recurring work with recurring clients who pay in good order and not delayed payments or just drying up and saying, we can't pay you. So, you know, to give me the detail, we also had a PPP loan, and that helped us through the bottom of the worst of it. That helped. I mean, that's how my family made it through. So that's a little more color for you.
Yeah. That was tough for everybody. I remember those conversations, and, you know, I mean, we were all scared. I thought we were going to die. Everybody thought we were going to die. It's crazy. And, you know, I think you guys stayed shut down probably longer than we did here in Atlanta. But, you know, it's being a solo gave you the freedom to take this risk where if you had partners and all these other things, maybe you wouldn't have been able to do it. But like you said, it also sort of exposed you for the pandemic. But the other part too, I mean, you didn't have a big staff that you had to support. Right. So I guess, you know, all you had to worry about was you and your family. So maybe that was helpful too, I guess. Yeah. All right. So, but you've made it through, you know, you're still alive. You're still doing it. Your firm's still around. How did you do it? And, you know, any insights for people that may be struggling, you know, as a solo with their own client base?
You have said this and you say it in many forms and fashions on your regular posts on LinkedIn, which is some variation of keep moving and take action. And the take action can be as simple as pick up the phone, send the email, set up a Zoom chat, go see your clients if you're able to. But that's what helped is, so for the existing client base that I had built primarily in Georgia, keeping those relationships warm. And then when we were able to travel again, you know, coming back, I mean, I come back to Atlanta pretty often. And when I do, beyond seeing friends and family, it's a business trip. you know, I'm meeting clients in person. And if nothing else, it's just, it's the relationship, because I want them to think of InTown Legal when they have their next need. And, you know, if you're not at or near top of mind, then they're just, they're not going to call. So it takes work. So to answer your question, how do we do it? Just for myself, just making some kind of effort with clients and even folks that could potentially be referral sources here, that's something that I've done. And you know, don't hesitate to ask existing people, you know, ask your referral networks, ask folks, particularly if you're thinking about doing what we did and moving to another part of the country, you know, there are plenty of big corporations around. Let's use something here locally. You've got the Amazons, you've got Starbucks, but you've also got all kinds of giant national real estate brokerages, for example. So for the real estate component of my practice, I asked friends in Atlanta who were with large national brokerages for referrals to their counterparts here in the Pacific Northwest. And that has turned in, through some effort, really good local referral opportunities for me to help collaborate with them and assist their clients on some of their projects. But the how is taking action, man. It's not going to fall on your lap. You got to get up and do something.
Amen, brother. But another thing you've done, maybe on and off or whatever, you've developed some what I call of counsel relationships, maybe with some other firms. And again, that's probably a result of your relationships and your referral relationships. So tell us about that and how that helped potentially bridge any gaps that you may have had.
I'll say another way, and you interrupt or ask questions, but one thing as a solo or maybe entrepreneurial minded is I've always felt like I should at least have the conversation, or I'm doing my family a disservice if I don't at least listen to an outreach or an entreaty of interest in teaming up with someone else or recruiter calls or something like that. And one of the of counsel relationships that I still have to this day, and folks that you know, are it came about when I was at my prior firm, the firm that I was at for several years before, right after I'd come out of back to private practice from the in-house role. And they had a local recruiter in Atlanta who had contacted me and had some really good conversations with those guys. And it's about the relationship, which I was just talking about. Didn't make sense to go to work with them, but I really liked the founding partner, like really liked him, like Jonathan Hawkins level of liking him. And kept in touch with him. We'd have coffees, we'd have lunches, just professionally, it was just a good person for me. But we have, you know, segued slowly over the years to just assisting each other in our firms. His firm in this case has some deep bench strength on litigation and employment law matters, which have been pretty frequent that I've had the need to refer out. And I've helped them on some of their communications and commercial real estate matters. So that's one example that just came from a relationship.
I think the of counsel relationship, if it's done right and it's with the right people and you structure it right and you do the conflicts and all that, I think it can be a really good relationship for a win for both sides. It can give bench. It's also a way to test out a working together relationship.
Agreed.
To potentially become partners or whatever later. So, you know, I'm a big believer in that for some situations.
Yeah.
So let's change subjects a little bit. I want to talk about, you post on LinkedIn. We've talked about it. I see some of your photos. One advantage of moving out west is you're in the mountains and maybe a better climate, nature, I don't know, compared to the Southeast, but you do a lot of trail running and big time trail running, you know, 100 plus mile type things, which is crazy to me. How did you get into that and how often are you out there doing it?
I use it as what I call my me time. And whatever it is for the attorneys or your founders that are going to be listening to this, I strongly encourage you to find something that keeps your personal interest. Maybe it's volunteering as well. I do some of that too. But the outdoor trail running is, I find it to be just very meditative. And, you know, we are in stressful jobs and our role is to help clients sweat through the details and things like that. And it, to me, it's just a trail running offers a good release in nature, a good physical release. So it's like you're so in the moment, you can't be thinking about, well, what do we have to file next week and the deadlines? And did we get this line item included? Or are we going to have to further admit? Whatever it is, it's a way to just help take a break from that in a constructive way. So beyond that, yeah, I don't know.
So I want to cut you off real quick and ask you another question. You can keep riffing on it, but you know, exercise is huge for me. I think every lawyer should do it. You know, I lift weights just about every day, but I also do some running here and there. Longest run I've ever done, maybe, I don't know, 10, 12 miles maybe. And I got to tell you, if I was stressed before, I was too damn tired afterwards to be stressed about anything. But, you know, I can't, you know, 12 miles-ish, that took it out of me. What's the longest race you've done?
I finished one 100 miler.
I mean, I cannot.
That was long. Yeah, it was.
And it was in the mountains too, wasn't it? It was flat.
Up in the North Georgia mountains. It was not flat. It took a long time. But, you know, whatever your personal challenges are, how you want to challenge yourself, for me, that was like, I want to do this, you know? And it's a kind of like the move out here. It's bold. I might not make it. You know, it's like good to kind of get out on that edge sometime. Like, I might fall flat on my face. I've had one of those too. And those aren't fun, but you learn from them. But anyway, challenging yourself, how far can you go? That's what I like to do.
So are you going to do another 100 mile race or something longer? Or you've done it? You've got checked that box.
I would like to do more, but I've actually signed up for a guided climb to the top of one of Washington's volcanoes this summer. And that's the shiny object for me right now is a goal to, you know, get up there and see what we can do. So hopefully that'll happen, but that's different, but it's also an endurance sport. So we'll see.
Well, you'll need to take lots of photos and make lots of posts about that. So let's shift.
That's one of them right there. That was the top of Mount St. Helens over my shoulder. So there we go.
Nice. Yeah. So shifting again. So another advantage of sort of running your own shop is you get to pursue other interests, business interests, side hustles, whatever you call it. So I know over time you've done some of that. Maybe you're still doing some of that. So let's talk about that a little bit. I know at some point, maybe some sort of communications type side hustle, and you've also got family business. So tell us about those.
I'm going to tell you about this, but I want to come back to one point that I think it's really important with the flexibility of your own job is, I mean, ultimately it's up to you to deliver and meet the client's needs when they need it. And it doesn't matter whether, you know, it's at 7 a.m. today, apologies guys, 7 a.m. or, you know, at midnight. But as long as you're meeting their needs, then you, the business owner, practitioner, have flexibility. Why I think it's, I'm going to put on my dad hat, which is take the time to go to your children's school events and do those kind of things, man. You do not get that time back. I can't stress that enough. And one of my frustrations back to the in-house position was I had, and even private practice before that at Big Law, had folks, you know, making big obscene gestures to look at their watch and do this to me, just like I'm doing right here, and shaking their head when I was leaving early to go to something for see my child, even though I had already in both instances arrived at 7 a.m. and did not take lunch so that I could get all my work done so that I could go do this, at least, you know, with a clear conscience for me. And I still had that kind of pushback. So you can have this flexibility. Earlier this week, I've got one of my children who's on spring break from college. I managed my schedule so I could go do something with her all day. I'm not going to get that time back. It was wonderful. I had a great experience. We'll talk about this for a long time. So that's something you can do as a solo that Big Law will likely frown upon if you're doing it too often. So keep that in mind as you're thinking about what and how you want to structure both your professional satisfaction, but your life. You only got one life to live that we know of. So take the time to go do those trips or with your friends or family too. enough preaching there. I've had a couple of side opportunities, and I've mentioned communications real estate or infrastructure in the past. And even when I was in law school here in Seattle, I worked at AT&T Wireless Services in their site acquisition department. And it, to me, I really liked the work. It was in-house type legal work. It was a subdivision of their law department. It was real estate, and it was communications, mixing all those together. And it was helping them with their ground leases and rooftop leases for where they were building out their cellular network around Seattle proper. But in later years, up until about a year ago, I have done some consulting work with a cell tower lease consultant that has a national practice working primarily with property owners. And I had reached out to this person at one time when I was in my first private practice role after I left the in-house opportunity, when I was thinking like outside the box, what are avenues where and how I can grow my own practice? I contacted this person about potentially being a source to help them with their lease work. So it didn't work out the way I'd originally planned, but it was a working relationship where I helped them in their business for a number of years working on tower leases. I found it to be interesting work, especially helping folks not get taken advantage of. And it was extra income for me. It helped smooth the flow, which you will have the ebbs and flows of income in private practice too.
So there was that. And then you've got your, what I'll call your family business.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
That's another opportunity where myself and my brother in this case have been just active directors. But there was a business in Columbia, South Carolina that our great grandfather founded in 1935. He was a farmer and sold his crops on the farmer's market in Columbia, South Carolina. It's called Cromer's Peanuts. And I did give Jonathan the shirt, full disclosure. But what this business has morphed into in the intervening almost 90 years is it produces and sells gourmet popcorn and peanut treats, both in retail form, in gift boxes and gift packages. So we have, my brother and I, and with our team there in Columbia, work with them to help manage, if you will, a family business. So that's another skill set that has also helped me. Like, for example, spend a lot of time on paying receivables and how are we going to manage the vendors this week based on the cash flow that's coming in. And that's another thing, any other gazillion businesses in our country had issues with coming out of COVID. And it's taken us a long time to help get right with a lot of folks to keep that business going. But that is a passion project is, I think, the right way to describe that one. But we enjoy sending popcorn and peanuts. And I use it in my legal practice to send gift boxes to clients and law departments saying, hey, thinking of you. Hope things are popping over there with you today, and do that.
Well, I'll tell you, my kids love it when you send the popcorn to us. All the different flavors. You got all those different flavors. I was not a huge popcorn fan, but I find myself just munching on that. You get that big bag. Thank you for that. So we've been at it for a while here, but we've talked about a lot of this stuff, but if for others out there, as you look back on your career and you've both big law, in-house, yeah, partner, now solo, moving across the country, are there any mistakes that you made that looking back you wish you could have told yourself, or maybe tell a lawyer out there that's about to embark on starting a firm?
There are. I'm trying to say whether the transition is but or however. I'm not sure what the right one is. Without those, I would not be here today, though. That's the thing. It's like you've got some and you're in the weeds and you're miserable or can be miserable at the time. That in-house position was pivotal for me. It was not good. It was just really challenging interpersonally. And there were just some really challenging moments while I was there. So that was the one I said earlier about be careful what you're running from and what you're running to. But without that the skills that I gleaned with them had helped me with a number of clients and their types of agreements going forward. And it it also helped me to find the opportunity, motivate me to find the opportunity to leave them and go do something like that. So the mistakes could be, I would say, some level of impatience. Like if, you know, you're sitting there at the end of the year and the economy's not super strong, you've got glowing reports, but gosh darn it, the managing partner says, hey, Rob, I hate to tell you this, but you're not going to make partner this year. Well, that's a frustrating conversation. Why? My hours are better than half the people that you're about to promote up. Well, I'm sorry, son. You've got different metrics in Atlanta than we do here in Kentucky. You know, it's just the way it is. And, you know, that's where patience can come in and give you, maybe if you are more patient, you might be less hasty decisions. What I would also say is find yourself a Jonathan Hawkins and, you know, have a friend like him, a professional friend and advisor that can offer you independent peer guidance and counsel, because your perspective is, you know, very much relied upon and has been really helpful and valuable for me. So
I appreciate that. It's feelings mutual. So, you know, looking back on your career, you've done all sorts of stuff and it's led you to where you are. You've, you know, again, small law, big law, small partnership,
yeah,
in-house, solo. You know, I guess the only thing you haven't done is maybe work for the government. But as you look forward, what do you think's next? Is there anything you're looking to do next, or are you just waiting to see what opportunity comes next?
There's some level of, you know, trust the lines that you have in the water. But I have, since I've been out here, one of the things I missed in Atlanta, like I was always envious of you and some of our other friends that went to law school locally. And I did not feel like I had just, I didn't have local law school graduates. There wasn't, where I attended law school at Seattle University, they just didn't have many attorneys in Atlanta. So I missed that. And in being back in this part of the country, I've had the opportunity and I wanted the opportunity to get re-engaged in some level volunteering or working with the law school. So I've taught a class about 2 years ago, and I'm likely going to teach it again either this fall or this coming spring. But it's a survey type class, really, again, mixing this technology infrastructure and our built environment, real estate, and how they blend together. And I've looked at both. I'm going to hold my phone up, you know, wireless technology. What have we used? How is that connected to our local grid? And also, importantly, climate impacts. You know, this area, for example, seeing more and more forest fires. How are local building codes and things like that reacting to them? Or our coastlines in the southeast, the tides are getting higher. You know, that there are obvious risks with the climate change impacts that we will all face for the rest of our lives. But there are opportunities in that as well. I see opportunities in that. And, you know, one other example is very analogous, the lease skill set that I have with tower leases and EV charging stations. You know, where does the EV company locate their charging station on a third party's property? There are a lot of opportunities with that. And with the infrastructure bill Infrastructure Act now, that, you know, there are a lot of dollars flowing to the state that are then going to flow to private businesses. So as an attorney who's looking for opportunities, those are some areas that both interest me and where I feel like I can, you know, move my skills to it. And of course, the family business, the goal is to have that knock it out of the park too, and at least get a good solid triple with that too.
At a state university?
No, I'm teaching at Seattle University.
Okay, so it's private. I was going to say, maybe you could check the box of working for the government. So
there you go. Yeah.
Almost. So Rob, awesome. Thank you for joining me today. This has been fun. You know, how can folks get in touch with you? Is there anything you want to plug? Now's your chance. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to be on here. In any way I can help, you know, I give freely to Jonathan Hawkins and your law firm, GC. So thank you for that opportunity. If you ever want to chat with me, our website is intownlegal.com. That's pretty static. My LinkedIn feed is a lot more current and updated. That's at RHT and then the Roman numeral 3. So I'm there. And then back to the family business. If any attorneys are looking to send a unique gift to your clients, I would ask that you please consider Cromer's Peanuts. And, you know, we've got gift boxes and gift tins and things like that that you can send. And we set up a discount code for all the listeners of the Founding Partners podcast, FP, Founding Partners Podcast 20. FPP20 will get you a 20% discount on your order. So try it out and see if you can have a good impression with your clients. And what's neat about the family business, last point, is its slogan is guaranteed worst in town. It's a negative slogan, but it's a pretty neat story behind that. And you can, you know, find out more about that on our website. I thank you for your time. This is really good to chat.
Well, I love that slogan. And I'll say that we really enjoy the popcorn and other goodies you've sent us. That's good stuff. And the last thing I'd say is I like on LinkedIn, you've got some pretty unique posts that you make where you blend in some of your outdoors, trail running and other activities and sort of connect it to areas and or concepts in the law. So that it's pretty entertaining. So keep doing that. And I encourage folks to find you, connect, follow, whatever. So again, thanks, Rob. Been real fun.
Yeah, it's been fun. And I would just encourage you, if you're the listeners, make the leap. Be bold and mighty forces will come to your aid and comfort. Don't sit on the sidelines 20 years down the road at big law saying, I hate myself and I'm miserable. There are people that are fine there, but if you've got the entrepreneurial bug, make the leap and the net will appear.
Well said. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, guys. Take care. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Founding Partner Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts to stay up to date on the latest episodes. You can also connect with Jonathan on LinkedIn and check out the show notes with links to resources mentioned throughout our discussion by visiting www.yourlawfirmgc.com. We'll see you next time for more origin stories and insights from successful law firm founders.